This is TWiT.
Last time we talked to you, Joan, we were talking about Russian influence on the elections and disinformation. That hasn't gone away. Apparently, yesterday, President Putin said, "Oh, we're not hacking you. You're hacking us."
Oh, okay, sure.
You're hacking us.
That's how this works.
That is one of the tools of the big lie. It's funny because it happens over and over again, and yet nobody seems to notice. Is just accusing the person. Uh-oh, what happened?
I didn't do it. I swear I didn't
Jeff,
do it.
We went black. There we go.
I didn't do a thing.
You're back.
is to accuse the person, your opponent, of doing the thing you're doing. And it's an amazing rhetorical trick because it gets them to get all twisted in knots defending themselves. And all of a
sudden, it's a combination of projection and whataboutism in the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Projection is a big one. Like, well, everybody, you know, we're hacking you, so you must be hacking us.
I mean, and we're not just talking about your sort of garden variety, you know, trolls and botnets online. I mean, hacking the power grid here, hacking infrastructure, hacking critical infrastructure. I mean, yeah, so it's a little bit different. The stakes are obviously enormous, but at the same time, you know, Putin's always going to pretend he doesn't know what's happening,
right.
But he himself is you know, very fascinated by technology and knows a lot, and so we should always be wary.
He also had an interesting justification for poisoning Navalny. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch this guy, and I hate to say it, but it brought back a little, like, this is where we were for the last 4 years. Like, yeah, with a guy who just says anything he wants.
But a guy who's really effing smart.
Well, maybe that's the difference.
I was in the room with him once in Davos. Joan now goes there instead of me.
I haven't been. Rent's too high.
The rent's too damn high.
At
the end of the day, you can keep your world power if I save a few thousand bucks.
So Putin saw a male journalist wearing a what do you call that greenish ring from like Arizona?
Jade?
No, not jade. The
turquoise.
Turquoise. Thank you. Turquoise. Yeah, so wearing a big turquoise ring, and he focused on it. He said, "Do men wear those?" and he wouldn't let go. He kept going back on it again, and the guy's wife had given it to him. And we all try to get the guy to give Putin, make him put it on. But he finds an odd little thing about somebody, and he just focuses in. And he's scary.
Yeah. Some people call that trolling, scary, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, his whole nation trolls us.
That was my point, sir.
Yeah.
Putin's response to ABC's questioning him about Navalny was, "Will Black Lives Matter?" It's like,
oh boy.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. It's not really on our beat, but I think it's great to have Joan on because what is on our beat is the use of technology, particularly the internet, these days to spread lies, misinformation, to mobilize, to radicalize. There's all sorts of malign uses. Now, Jeff is the big defender of big tech, and I don't disagree with him. Big tech, in fact, Joan,
of the internet. I'm defending the internet.
Yeah, but Joan was saying this. You were not here at the moment, but Joan was saying this before the show began. Where would we have been in the last year and a half without Zoom and tech and all that?
Amen. You know, I wrote a thank you note to the internet on Medium 2 weeks ago, and I mean it. I think that we would have been worked without it.
But this is our constant battle on this show, but also just in general. There's good in tech and there's bad in tech. You wrote a piece, Joan, for Harvard Magazine saying disinformation ain't going away. You know, can it be stopped?
That was a piece that I was profiled in.
Yeah,
headline, so there's a couple, Joan, other researchers in there.
That headline on that piece.
Can disinformation be stopped?
What's your answer to that, Joan?
Well, it as with everything, it depends. You know, one of the things that I think the internet has been fantastic at is helping us route information around the planet, lowering the cost of it. I was just thinking about high fidelity video and how different it is to be isolated, but not necessarily alone in the same way. And, you know, I'm wearing my phone Losers of America t-shirt here today because I do, you know, I'd still like romanticize the phone and voice and, you know, just the way in which people come to hear and learn from one another. But there is something different about video. And when it comes to disinformation, I think we're dealing with, again, a distribution issue. We're dealing with a content issue. We're dealing with, you know, people who are motivated either through money or clout to, you know, push disinformation around. Obviously, it's politically rewarding to be able to do that. And so I wish I could say in this moment that disinformation can be stopped. I think one thing we have to focus on is figuring out, you know, what should these distribution channels look like, and how should they be run, and who should oversee them, and we got to go from there. Like, we need serious standards and protocols to get at what I've been calling a public interest internet, or an internet that serves the broadest public good.
I don't think disinformation will ever be stopped as long as there's some form of profit involved, whether it's money, whether it's political power or
power
world domination.
Well, and as Jeff has pointed out, it predates the internet by a long shot.
Since witchcraft, since print.
Yeah. But it's part of it. Maybe it is a little bit more. I mean, look, we've always had, I'm sure, in the pre-print, there were Middle Ages, there were conspiracy theories that made the rounds, just very, very slowly. You know,
right.
But as soon as there were newspapers, you know, there's the press wars of the 1820s in the United States.
Well, I mean, you go back to ballots. Printed ballads and people going through, and that was the source of a lot of the witchcraft conspiracy theories.
But there is a cynicism that's a little different. In fact, it's interesting you invoked the Phone Losers of America, John, because I think they're harmless, but they also deal in a form of disinformation, and there's a certain amount of almost cynicism, like a mocking, like, we can fool these people because they're stupid, I guess. Patronizing.
Well, I think it's not stupid. I think it's trusting, right?
Which like, is a even lot worse. Of us just you're mocking people because they're trusting. Things. That's terrible.
And I mean, but that's what's so interesting here is we have to change how information is shared and what kind of labels are put on it and how it arrives at our door and what we call news and what we don't call news. I've been a big pusher of trying to get us to think about, well, we have distribution pathways. Social media really favors things that are popular and novel. And so what if we were to also make sure that social media served things that are timely, accurate, local knowledge?
But nobody wants that, right? I mean, that doesn't...
No.
Well, I mean, you don't have to want
everybody wants
to
dessert. Nobody wants the vegetables. Like,
nobody wants water. I mean, like, it's nice. It's good to have. Yeah. It's necessary. But, like, if you have a choice between water and wine or water in a martini or water and, you know, an ice cold seltzer like I have
here. Which is
here,
what Joan's drinking, yes.
You know, that's but part of it is really trying to figure out in what proportions do we need this. You know, and I think, too, you know, so, like, if you think about broad stakes of different conspiracy theories, like probably the most broad stakes that most people are familiar with is, you know, this notion of Holocaust denialism. And, you know, a couple years ago, Zuckerberg came out and said that, well, he's not going to remove Holocaust denial on his platform because people have the right to be wrong about things. And later, as we realize how big, you know, anti-Semitic movements get organized and how big they become when they are allowed to exchange information unfettered and reach audiences of people that do not necessarily understand the stakes of what they're reading. And it's, you know, just kind of laced in with, you know, missives from your aunt and your, you know, your cousin's graduation pictures and your best friend's cat, and Holocaust denialism is just right there in the same mix.
Yeah.
It's different. And so we do need to think about ranking, sorting, labeling. You know, I think we need more librarians at the helm of the internet.
Amen to that.
I like that.
You know, I don't think it's insurmountable. I just think that there's different ways of thinking about what the solution
might
be.
It's a big hill to climb. Yeah.
So, Joan, do me a favor. And you know, I think that, so Leo accuses me of being an apologist for the platforms. I defend the internet, and they happen to be the current proprietors, but they're not the forever proprietors. These are early days. So the discussion that I want to change is, rather than, part of the problem is when we talk about how Facebook's broken or Twitter's broken, that puts a ceiling on the discussion that we just try to fix incrementally then. If you break out of the current proprietors of the net, how would you describe in larger, more universal terms the internet you want?
It's a good question. I want things mostly that are reflective of the values that we would instill in what we might call a library, right? Like, obviously, the public library is something that I value. And so when we have search, I want search results that are indicative of the questions that I'm asking and have been vetted in such a way that are mostly accurate. The tension is obviously about timeliness, which is to say that the thing that gets weaponized often by disinformation operatives is breaking news events. So you have something into the world that people want to know about, and they don't know enough about it to not assume that what comes up first isn't accurate. And we have people weaponizing that. We have people that are jumping into that. And so I think that Twitter is actually moving in the right direction. They now have curators for their trends. So it's not as easy to trigger a trending topic as it has been in the past. And so I do think that platforms are learning that when you're in the information business, that quality matters. But it, you know, when it comes to an internet, I think the other piece of this is really about making sure that people have access, and then also making sure that there's digital literacy taught in high schools and colleges so that you understand more about what the information commons is and how it can be manipulated.
What do we do about digital literacy for grandpa, though?
Well, in 20, you know,
he'll be dead
70.
Soon. Is that what you're saying?
Well, but
I'm just joking. Don't
grandpa's the one screwing up the world more than
well,
the kids. The kids part of the grandpa's.
And that, I think, is a legacy of, like, believe what you read, right? Someone took the effort to write it down, and other people are sharing it, and it must be true. I see it. The one thing that's really interesting about my latest research is the notion of the rabbit hole. So everybody says it, but nobody's really defined it. So I said to myself, here's an opportunity for an academic to really mess things up. And so I've started to think about this. And for me, a rabbit hole is you see the same information and it's really repetitive. And you see it on the same platform over and over. Then you see the same information and it's redundant. That is, you see the same information across different web spaces. So you go from YouTube over to Twitter. You see the same thing. You assume, oh, well, must be true. The other thing the social media provides is responsiveness. That is, if you ask a question on your social media, people are likely to post a link or give you a response. Or if you ask a question in a search engine, it's going to give you a response no matter what it is that you put in there. It's very rare that you get zero responses from a place like Google or Bing. And then the last thing that is the troublesome part of the rabbit hole is reinforcement. So if I go on YouTube and I'm like, what is this stupid QAnon thing? I don't know, right? And so I type it in and the algorithm, the reinforcement algorithm, will remember that. So say I watch two or three videos and I think to myself, not for me. The algorithm is actually going to try to get me to re-engage with that content.
Keep watching these.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, like, and so, and that's not bad if you're watching, you know, you know, greatest home runs or, right. you know, slam dunk contests or genres of bands. It's really bad when you're like looking at network conspiracies and you're trying to figure out who killed JFK, right? If you're just trying to figure that out, I can tell you, you're going to get Oswald, but I can also tell you're going to get a lot of other stuff.